I did not sleep much that night. Back in the cave of Cairns, lying on a soft bed of blankets, covered with two more, enshrouded in darkness but with a lamp and a box of matches within reach, and with the priceless knife next to me, I should have felt relaxed and secure, but my thoughts raced and sleep did not come. The stone was not mine, of course. I was a slave, after all. It would not make me rich. But still, for finding a treasure like that and giving it to my owners, its rightful owners, I would be entitled to a reward. A small reward, for them, compared to the inestimable value of this marvellous stone. But for me, more than I had dreamed of for many years, I would get my freedom back. What would I do with it? To be free. What a wonderful thought. But when I tried to enjoy it, tried to think of the future that lay ahead of me now, tried to envision all the possibilities that I would have once I was a free woman again, my imagination, as well as my rational mind, failed me. What would I really want to do? Who would I really want to be? And what of this could I actually hope to achieve? And how? A ceaseless procession of unfocused images of future me's swirled before my eyes in the dark, until my head swirled with them, disoriented and confused. With an effort of will, I stopped those racing thoughts. There would be time enough to think them slowly and carefully in the forthcoming months. To calm down, I tried to masturbate, but it made the cut across my vulva hurt, and even to start bleeding again, so I gave up. Why did I feel so uneasy? Whatever my life would be, once I was free again, it would be better than being a slave. Or would it? This thought crept up at me from behind, unanticipated, uninvited, and unwelcome, yet suddenly it was there. Did I really, truly, with all my heart, want to be free? Or was there a comfort in being a slave? A quietude, a deep satisfaction, a secret desire fulfilled that I'd never been consciously aware of. I chased this thought away. Who in her own sane mind would not rejoice at the prospect of losing her chains? I masturbated now, never mind the pain and the bleeding. I needed that orgasm. And I became aware, for this orgasm I needed him. Again I was kneeling in front of him, but this time his hands that held my head did not push me away, but pulled me towards his crotch. This time his penis stayed in my mouth, throbbing with arousal as I worked on it with my lips, tongue, and teeth. This time his moans of ecstasy were so loud that they drowned out my own. This time his hot sperm spurted out so richly while his penis pressed against the back of my mouth and his grip did not relent that I almost suffocated. Swallowing as hard as I could, desperately gasping for air, knowing he would not let go of me, knowing he was completely absorbed in his own lust, knowing it meant nothing to him whether I lived or died from it. This time it was perfect. Only this time it was not real. And then, when my body slowly returned from my own ecstasy in which it had been so breathlessly lost, when I was capable of thinking again, another thought began to take shape, and it was an uncomfortable one. I would have to tell where I had found that stone. That was obvious. But equally obvious was what a treasure like this would provoke. Greed. Where this one had come from, many more must be, and once we'd be looking for them, we would find them. We would come in peace, of course. We would offer them beautifully colored glass in exchange for their drab, uncut, colorless stones. We would offer them things they never dreamed of, like liquor and guns. And only if they did not trade with us fairly, we'd have to use our much bigger guns on them. Nightmares of conquest and carnage haunted the uneasy sleep into which I finally fell. Pictures coming alive that I had seen in history books long ago. Piles of disemboweled bodies cut open in the search for hidden gems. Burning forests and villages and rivers of blood flowing through corpse-littered, scorched, barren landscapes. And through those scenes of terrible terminal destruction, I was straying, naked, my hand clutching by its blade a knife with a broken hilt, searching for its owner, whom I knew to be still alive among all those dying and dead, to push the blade into his heart, to relieve him of this unbearable pain that I had caused. When I awoke from those horrible dreams, a pale glimmer from the direction of the cave's entrance told me that dawn had arrived. I could not stay in the cave. I felt it was safe to go to the bay one last time, though this time, of course, I would not go down. I would watch the sea from the vantage point of the rim of the precipice, just to make sure that I had read those drawings correctly, to know that they really had come. I stood on the rim of the precipice, next to the tree with the rope, before the sun had risen above the mountain behind me, and as I had expected, I found the bay still as empty and deserted as it had been. I looked out over the sea. Did I see three small sails on the horizon, or was it only the glistening of distant waves? As I strained my eyes to scan the horizon, I knew he was standing next to me. Before I turned around to look at him, I took off my jacket and let it fall to the ground. I wanted to be as naked as he was when we faced. The chilly morning breeze on my bare body made me shiver. Or was it his gaze that caused the goosebumps all over my skin? This time his penis was not erect. Also, his hands were empty. "You forgot your knife," I said. "You should be more careful. If the wrong people found it, it can turn against you and kill you all." He shrugged. "Our fate is in the hands of the gods." He took the knife out of my hand and held it against the inner side of my left breast. The blade played with my breast, circled it, made it swing. Then its tip touched my nipple, caressed it, then moved to the other breast and did the same there. It did not cut the skin. I did not flinch, and my nipples got hard. "Good," he said, and handed me back the knife. "Bring it with you to the cave." "Oh no," I said. "I will never go down there again. You cannot possibly think that I would."
"But that's what you are here for," he said. "Didn't you know it?"
It took a while for his words to sink in. "Oh my God, no! I thought, this horrible ceremony, I thought that you'd bring this wretched girl with you."
"Did you really?" he asked. "No, we meet you here, or we come here in vain."
"Oh my God," I said again. "So you're saying that you need me? Me? You ask me to suffer and to die for you?"
"Need you? Ask you? You want it to be made easy for you, don't you?" he said. "What else do you expect? Gratitude? Respect? Admiration? Love? That's a lot of things to demand without giving anything."
"But you want me to give?"
"I said this is what you are here for. I said this is what we come for," This is what many will die for. I said nothing about wanting anything.
Die? I asked.
The sea's dangerous on the return trip. Of 3 boats, 1 or 2 may get back.
So why do you take this terrible risk?
For you, he said. There was a moment of silence.
Are you in one of those boats? I finally asked. Will you? This ceremony, all that I have seen, is it like this? Was it all real?
He did not reply. I looked at his beautiful bronze-skinned body.
If I do it, will I meet you there? I whispered.
He turned away.
Please, wait! I shouted.
He was gone. I could see the 3 approaching boats quite clearly now. It was time to creep back, to hide behind a bush as long as I dared to watch, then to pick up my jacket, sneak off, away from the precipice, into the wood, and then hurry to my hiding place of larder, cover my traces, crawl into the dark safety of my cave. It was time. I folded the jacket and carefully weighed it down with stones. It was made of good leather. I did not want it to be blown away by the storms. I took the rope and wound it several times around the tree. I threw it down. Its end was now 10 feet above the ground. I took the knife between my teeth and climbed down the rope as far as it went. Then I jumped. Its end hung several feet above my head, safely out of my reach. I went to the cave and laid down the knife at its entrance. A few feet away, I sat down. The sun had just risen above the precipice, and its rays felt pleasantly warm upon my naked skin. I put one hand between my thighs, closed my eyes, and listened to the sounds of the waves, and the birds, and the wind.